Hello and welcome to the Mejlis Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pannier, host of the Mejlis and author of the Central Asia in Focus newsletter. It's been nearly 3 years since the Taliban returned to power in Afghanistan. It was an unwelcome event in many parts of the world. When the Taliban were in power in the late 1990s, most of the Central Asian governments viewed the Afghan group as a threat and were glad to see them chased from power in late 2001. But after the Taliban again seized Afghanistan in 2021, most of the Central Asian governments took an entirely different approach to the Taliban. Trade has been steadily growing between Central Asia and Afghanistan, and Central Asian officials regularly meet with Taliban representatives to discuss cooperation in major projects. Of course, there are still some sore points in relations between the Taliban and several Central Asian states. To discuss all this, I am joined by Kadir Habib, director of RFARL's Afghan service, known locally as Azadi; Pahlawan Turgunov, managing editor at RFARL's Uzbek service, known locally as Azadlik; and Faruk Yusufi, director of RFARL's Turkmen service, known locally as Azadlik. Thank you all for joining me. Kadir, I'd like to start with you. In 2001, after September 11th, when the U.S. started its operations in Afghanistan, if I wanted to visit Afghanistan and I lived in Central Asia, if I wanted to cross the border, bring something across the border for trade, what was the situation? Where would I go? Were there places, was there any connection between Central Asia and Afghanistan?
2001 was a big change when it comes to relation between Afghanistan and Central Asian countries. Bruce, as you mentioned in the intro, before that, from 1996 to 2001, the relationship between the Central Asian countries and Afghanistan was complex and varied among the different nations. Like Uzbekistan and Tajikistan, they were supporting the Taliban opposition, that time called Northern Alliance. And Turkmenistan adopted a neutral stance toward the Taliban at that time as well. Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan, they had limited direct involvement with the Taliban government compared to their neighbors. So after 2001, the situation after a democratic government in Afghanistan has been established. So all the countries in the region, including the Central Asian countries, were looking forward for cooperation and to benefit from a stable Afghanistan, particularly when it comes to trade and transit. And so a door was opened for all these countries to connect with Afghanistan and engage with Afghanistan. So many negotiations and meetings started with Afghan government, newly established Afghan government at that time. So the trade started to increase every year, I would say, with the neighboring countries. And there has been agreements on big projects like energy and transit. All the main or mega projects that we are talking about today here and Taliban government is in contact with the Central Asian countries today, like the Afghan Trans project between Uzbekistan and Afghanistan, which is going to open a transit railway from Hayraton to connect with Uzbekistan's to connect Uzbekistan with Pakistan, and another railway link between Turghundi and Herat province with Turkmenistan railway, and Khaf and Iran to Herat. All these projects were agreed upon during this after 2001 and during the last two decades. So, but the main obstacle on the way of implementation of these projects were the instability in the country.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Pakalwan, I want to go to you now. You know, there was a bridge built across the Amudarya River connecting Uzbekistan and Afghanistan back in the Soviet days. It was closed prior to, for I think most of the 90s, certainly by the end of the 90s, it was closed entirely. But it's reopened. And now it started out as a big, is really the major connection between Central Asia and Afghanistan. It still is, probably. Can you talk about how trade, you know, what does trade look like along the border right now, both rail and road? You know, we know that the Uzbek National Railway Company is actually maintaining and repairing the line, the railway line all the way to Mazar-e-Sharif. So what's trade look like along the border now?
Yes, the government of President Mirziyoyev has taken totally different approach, totally opposite of the one we saw in the late 1990s. If you remember, Mirziyoyev told the parliament that he would do business with anyone as long as they don't point gun at Uzbekistan. And the project you just mentioned, a repair project, actually kicked off in February last year. And the Uzbek side offered a generous discount of 50% according to the Uzbekistan Railway the report. During a meeting earlier this month, I think on July 4th, the head of the Uzbek Railways mentioned that they are committed to carrying out kind of high quality repairs at a reasonable price. And Uzbeks, apart from that, Uzbeks are now training employees of the Afghan railway as well, where they're also providing kind of waivers for road and rail transportations. And President Mirziyoyev keeps emphasizing how crucial this the project is. They are doing everything they can to get Afghanistan involved and make it a key part of regional dynamics. In the past 2 years, Afghanistan has become one of Uzbekistan's top 10 foreign trade partners. Considering that there was no trade between the two countries until 2017, while only humanitarian goods were crossing the border sent by the Western countries and the UN. This is a huge deal, I think. And I've been looking at the structure of the exports and imports between Uzbekistan and Afghanistan based on 2022 data. Uzbekistan apparently primarily exporting wheat flour, electricity, and refined petroleum to Afghanistan, while importing raw cotton, nuts, and dried fruits from Afghanistan. And Uzbekistan's exports to Afghanistan totaled around $800 million, though some data suggest it could be as high as $900 million. And this makes Afghanistan Uzbekistan's eighth largest foreign trade partner. I think it's worth noting that Uzbekistan's export of electricity to Afghanistan has sparked quite a debate in Uzbekistan's social media. Some people find it controversial because particularly during the winter season when many Uzbeks face severe electricity shortages. However, the government of Uzbekistan stressed that Uzbekistan has both a contractual obligation and the moral obligation to assist the people of Afghanistan. As they say, you don't get to choose your neighbors. I've been told that if you travel to the border with Afghanistan, to the Termez city, where the Hayraton Bridge is, you would see lots of Afghans opening businesses there, medium and small businesses, particularly restaurants, bed and breakfast hotels, etc. So there is lots of trade going on between two countries.
Okay, thank you very much. Farouk, I'd like you to tell us a little bit about trade with Afghanistan post, after August 2021. But one of the things that's really curious for me about the relationship between Turkmenistan and the current Afghan regime is that Turkmenistan doesn't really put much, doesn't engage in projects where it's outside its border, right? I guess that's the way I want to put it. You don't see Turkmenistan actually going and you know, taking a very active role in building something outside the Turkmen borders. But that's not really the case with Afghanistan, right? This is something kind of different. I mean, they're building the railroad to Herat. Other things. So what's trade look like now between Taliban-ruled Afghanistan and Turkmenistan?
Yeah, you are right. The Turkmen government is, we know that it's quite isolated from the outside world when it comes to Taliban government. And even during the Ashraf Ghani government, there was some sort of engagement, and they always touting the relationships, because Turkmens, frankly, they were always wary of Afghans. And post August 2021 relations, they were quite warmer. If you look from outside, their relations were warmer towards the new Taliban government, and Turkmenistan tried and strived to create good relationships with the new government in Kabul. And the trade, when it comes to trade, Turkmenistan never openly talks about what it's selling out, what it's exporting to any country, so that people keep its own population in the dark of what's how much and what the government is selling and how much money it's acquiring from that export. But from what we know, Turkmenistan sends a lot of electricity to Afghanistan, fuel, and liquefied gas. In recent years, they increased the, from what we hear, the volume of liquefied gas that's being sent to Afghanistan. What's the dollar value of that export? We don't know. It's hard to say. As I said, Turkmenistan never announces those kind of numbers. And one of the main topics between, like, in this engagement with the Afghan government led by Taliban is TAPI. And recently, Afghan publications, Afghan internet sites like Tola News and others, reported that Turkmen ambassador in Kabul, Haja Avezov, met with Afghan acting foreign minister Muttaqi, and they discussed the TAPI project, and the Afghan government said that they are finalizing this legal framework to start constructing the pipeline. I mean, this kind of words were there ever since Taliban came to power. And moreover, it was these words we heard during Ashraf Ghani's government. And this rhetoric never materialized in real work in Afghanistan. As we know, the biggest part of the TAPI project lays through Afghan territory, and it hasn't started. And moreover, it remains what the Pakistani and Indian government's approach to this project. They seem to be a little cold, like their interest cooled down towards this project. And frankly, Turkmenistan itself now is trying to find new routes for its gas exports. They're talking with Azerbaijan, they're talking with Turkey, and recently they even signed a new memorandum of understanding about a gas pipeline into Iran, a new gas pipeline into Iran. So the Turkmen government itself seems not so optimistic about the prospects of TAPI project. But there is significant engagement, trade engagement between the two sides, but we don't know all the details about the volume, dollar volume, and the volume of export itself.
Let me ask a quick question. When I know the Turkmen government and Turkmen state media don't mention any of these meetings, or they rarely do. What words do they use to describe the Taliban government? Did they ever use the word Taliban?
They don't use the word Taliban. They say Afghan government, or they say Afghan officials, Afghan representatives. But even when this kind of engagement happens, they don't report about it. Like the state media doesn't report about the meetings or any talks with the Taliban government. Sometimes we hear from the regional media, including the Afghan media, when there is these kind of talks. Like earlier this year, there were a few reports on Afghan media and like Kyrgyz media and Kazakh media, who were reporting that Afghanistan requested, for example, increase of electricity exports from Turkmenistan. And at the moment, according to those reports, Turkmenistan increased the electricity export to some 1.8 billion kilowatts a year to Afghanistan, while its own population is experiencing shortage of electricity. The power outages became very regular in Turkmenistan, but which of course annoys the local population inside Turkmenistan, that the government is not providing its own population, but sending a lot of electricity to Afghanistan, primarily, and other countries.
Yeah, that sounds similar to what Pakhlawan was just telling us. Pakhlawan, I want to ask you the same question, though, about how does Uzbek government and media describe the government in Afghanistan? Do they use the word Taliban?
They usually refer as the Afghan government led by Taliban, and they often use Taliban delegation.
Okay, thank you. Great, thank you. Kadir, we've been talking a lot about electricity. How much electricity does Afghanistan receive from Central Asia?
Well, there are a couple of projects. Major power infrastructure project is Casa 1000, with which the Afghanistan, Pakistan, are taking advantage of the energy from the Central Asian countries. It is a 1.2 billion infrastructure project, which makes it possible to Kyrgyz Republic and Tajikistan to export 1,300 megawatt of hydraulic power to Afghanistan and Pakistan. And then there is also TAP, the power interconnection project between Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Turkmenistan, which is sort of a complementary project to the Casa 1000, and it allows power trade between the two countries. And also there is another project, TOTAP, which is include Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan. And the major power transmission line designed to improve energy security and efficiency to meet the increasing electricity demand in South Asian countries. And Pakistan, particularly during the summer, where they are facing constraint when it comes to electricity and use of electricity. People are, during the summer, using more and more electricity for cooling and due to high temperature. So there are three projects. So these all projects are major and important for the energy transmission and transfer from Central Asian countries to Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Okay, thank you. Let me ask you a question to get your opinion on this. Afghanistan has six neighbors, right? So we know the situation with Pakistan is not great. We don't have time to go into the problems they've had. It's been tense with Iran since the Taliban came to power, although it seems to be getting a little better. The Chinese border with Afghanistan is very small and in a remote area. Would you say it's fair to say that the Taliban's relationships with Central Asia are the best relations they have with any of their neighbors?
Well, looking on to the facts on the ground, it seems so. Particularly the approach of, let's say, if we look into the policy and approach of pragmatic, I will call it pragmatic policy and approach of the Central Asian countries toward Afghanistan, they have a sort of more, I agree with you, better, we can call it better than Pakistan and sort of Iran at the moment while we are talking. But these countries also have their own concerns, which is mostly coming from the spread of extremism and militancy across their borders from Afghanistan. And if we look at the latest report from the UN Security Council, it mentions the presence of those militant or extremist groups that could be considered a threat for the Central Asian countries, such as IMU and Jamaat al-Ansar. For instance, IMU is a Islamic movement of Uzbekistan, and also the threat from ISK. So they have their concerns, but they also acknowledge that the threat that existed during the last two decades, they couldn't do the trade or transit, or they couldn't took the full advantage of trade and transit from Afghanistan to South Asia and to get access to Arabian Sea. So that threat is now gone, which was the Taliban. Now the Taliban are the guarantor of those projects that we already mentioned, like the Afghan Trans project or other project, which is include Turkmenistan or Tajikistan. But these countries are still sort of having a oversight of the situation, or also they are keeping their borders sort of tight or keeping open eye on the security situation and who is entering to these countries. So they are looking forward to take the best advantage of this situation now, because Taliban are in power. They are not anymore the threat to trade and transit. But in the meantime, they have there some observation and I would say their concerns.
Okay, thank you. And I want to be clear, too, that we haven't talked much about Tajikistan. We don't have anyone from the Tajik service on the program. But, of course, Tajikistan's relationship with the Taliban is very different. They are the outlier among the Central Asian states who really don't engage with the Taliban, or certainly to the least amount possible. And a reminder, we're talking about Central Asia's relations with the Taliban, with Taliban-ruled Afghanistan. And my guests are Pahlawan Turgunov, managing editor at RFARL's Uzbek service, known locally as Azatlik; Farouk Yusupi, director of RFARL's Turkmen service, known locally as Azatlik; and Kadir Habib, Director of RFARL's Afghan service, known locally as Azadi. Thank you. Let's talk a little bit about security. We'll continue in that vein because I'm curious. Pakhwan, I'll start with you. I think you put it well when you said that part of the agreement was that no one in Afghanistan will point the gun at Uzbekistan. Now, it hasn't always worked out like that. And some of these groups that Kadir just mentioned are certainly concerning to the Uzbek government. What level of cooperation, if any, is there between the Uzbek government and the Taliban concerning these militant groups that are outside the Taliban control, or at least they're worried that they could be outside the Taliban's control?
Well. In the past, Afghanistan was seen as a main source of religious extremism and destabilization in the country. Nowadays, the only statements about possible kind of threat of ISIS, threat of other groups such as IMU, is coming from Russia. And during their visits recently, Russian officials, every time they visit Uzbekistan, they do stress the threat coming from Afghanistan. But Uzbek government has never responded to this kind of threat or statements or warnings. I should say that not everyone is happy with how the government of Uzbekistan has been handling its relationship with the Taliban. Some people argue that it could send the wrong message to certain segments of the population about accepting the Taliban's interpretation of Islam, potentially leading to the radicalization of some people inside Uzbekistan. There have been reports of people in Samarkand, if you remember, a couple of years ago, saluting a Taliban delegation during Friday prayers. And last year, there was news of a Taliban delegation visiting the Muslim board of Uzbekistan, which is the official religious body of Uzbekistan, to discuss religious exchanges without specifying details. However, during these interactions, the Uzbek government has been actively cracking down on religious symbols lately. Over the past year, there have been closures of shops and restaurants in Tashkent run by religious individuals displaying kind of Arabic or religious names. In my view, this suggests that while Uzbekistan and Uzbek government is engaging with the Taliban and the broader Islamic world to attract investment, which they need badly to implement so-called the reforms, economic, social reforms announced by President Mirziyoyev, they are also cautious about the kind of societal impact it might have.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. I'm Farouk. Obviously we don't get a huge amount of information out of Turkmenistan, but, before the Taliban returned to power in August 2021, there were problems along the Turkmen-Afghan border, right? Go ahead.
Yeah, there were a few incidents during the previous Afghan government when there were shootouts on the border with multiple casualties, at least on Turkmen side. There were at one case there were 25 Turkmen border guards were killed, and in another case another couple dozen border guards were killed. But even after Taliban came to power, there were a few incidents with less casualties when Turkmen border guards came into contact or into shootout with smaller militant groups in Afghanistan, but the sides, Turkmen and Afghan side or Taliban side rather, they managed somehow to calm down the emotions between in those situations. And Turkmenistan is the Turkmen government is very wary of the potential threat that might come from the militant groups in Afghanistan. And at the moment, we hear that Turkmen government turns a blind eye into intrusions by the Afghans into Turkmen territory. A couple of months ago, we reported that not militant groups, but like ordinary Afghan citizens were penetrating inside Turkmen territory just to for their cattle to graze on the Turkmen fields, and Turkmen government did not take any action towards that in order not to provoke any potential troubles. So at the moment, they are both sides are trying very very hard and very diligently to not cause any troubles. In this matter, Turkmenistan is is more compromising, if you want, towards the Afghan side. And from what we hear from our observers inside the country, most of the trade, good conditions in trade for Afghanistan are created in order to appease the Taliban government, so the Taliban government keeps its citizens in check, so that they don't cause any problems on the Turkmen border.
Okay, thank you. And you three are the perfect three to discuss this next topic. Kadir, could you tell me about the Kocatepe Canal, please?
Sure, thank you. So this is one of the mega projects that Taliban are pushing for its development in the region, and I think it is one of the most significant projects for irrigating the desert in northern part of the country and northwestern part, and the 150 mile project 115 mile project, it's Kocatepe Canal, is considered important for the agriculture production in Afghanistan. So Taliban kept pushing with this project. It continue. However, the second phase is also started, but after the start of the second phase, we haven't heard much. The completion of the first phase was hugely promoted by the Taliban and media. Their deputy prime minister, Abdul Ghani brother, he inaugurated the project. It seems that there were some doubts that due to the volume of this project, it will be difficult for the Taliban to fund it, to complete this project. And so we haven't heard much after the second phase of the project started, but time to time, there are reports coming out from the state-run media that the project continue, but this project became a source of concern besides the optimism about the trade and transit between the countries, Central Asian countries, and Afghanistan under the Taliban. This project became like a sort of concern, particularly for Uzbekistan and Turkmenistan, because these countries are mostly relying for the irrigation and on this water. In Afghanistan, due to the instability in the past four decades, was not included in the water agreements among the Central Asian countries. So now there is a concern that by the completion of this project, it may divert 15 to 20% of Amu Darya from Central Asia to Northern Afghanistan.
Okay, thank you. And certainly, it is the it's the legal and moral right of Afghanistan to take their share of the water. Central Asia has been taking it for a long time. You mentioned decades since the Soviet era. Pakhlawan, what does the Kosh-Tepe Canal mean for Uzbekistan?
Well, according to estimates made by Uzbekistan's Water Management Agency, once completed, Afghanistan will be receiving around 15% of the water of Amu Darya River. Currently, I think it stands at around 7%. Uzbekistan's stance on the construction of the Kosh-Tepe Canal has been quite interesting. Initially, there were some pretty strong statements from both sides when the construction started 2 years ago. And President Mirziyoyev said it was a big concern for Uzbekistan, especially since the country was already dealing with severe water shortages even before the construction began. But then the tone shifted to something more constructive, and Uzbekistan even offered to help with a project. It is still unclear what interest Uzbekistan might have in the Kosh-Tepe Canal's construction or what kind of help they could offer. They said they would be... there was a delegation head by the regional governor of Surkhandarya region, and he said that they will be establishing kind of working group which would offer a help in the construction of the canal. But the rhetoric has definitely changed since then. There might be kind of some behind-the-scenes discussions happening, but we haven't heard anything from Uzbek officials over the past year about the canal. I believe they still view it negatively and think it will have an adverse impact on Uzbekistan. But it seems like they've decided to focus on projects of mutual interest, like the Trans-Afghan Corridor Railway project, instead of getting stuck on controversial issues for now.
Okay, thank you. Let's go downstream a little more. Farouk, what does this mean for Turkmenistan? I mean, Turkmenistan keeps its cards close to the vest, as they say. They don't really say very much about it, but they actually have made statements about responsible use of water without pointing the finger at the Taliban or something. But, you know, if it is following Turkmenistan, this is almost a sign of panic for them to even mention that they hope their neighbors use water responsibly. What's happening with the Turkmen government and their reaction to this?
Yeah, so far Turkmenistan never openly spoke about Kosh-Tepe Canal. As you rightly mentioned, they only indirectly hinted that they are concerned, saying that everyone should use responsibly. And they even after the this issue came onto the agenda, they conducted some sort of a conference that they called international conference. Of course, it was not an international conference, and they were talking about responsible use of water reservoirs of the region, and so on and so forth. All words. But what we hear behind the scenes, they are trying to convince a Taliban government to be cautious or to approach this issue with a common sense, so that they don't cause a big disaster. Because, if the Kosh-Tepe Canal will take up to 20% of that of the water from Amu Darya, that will mean, according to the hydro specialists close to the government who used to work for the government, it will mean up to 50% of deficit, water deficit, for Turkmenistan from the current volumes, which is already the current volumes of water for irrigation and other purposes is already in the scarcity of water in Turkmenistan. But from the current volumes, it can decrease up to 50%. And this is really worrying for the Turkmen government and it is a real threat for the survival of the country, because Amudarya is the only major water reservoir, water source that Turkmenistan uses for agriculture and for consumption, like for drinking water.
Okay, thank you. We're coming to the end of the show. I would love to talk about this topic on and on, and I'm sure we'll get back to it again in a future program. But let me just ask you all to answer one question, which is, it is almost 3 years since the Taliban are back in power. Our relations with, and you can deal with your countries individually, are relations still fragile with Taliban-ruled Afghanistan, or stable and likely to get better in your opinion? And I'll start with you, Farooq.
They are uncertain, I would say. I mean, fragile, I don't know, but they are uncertain. And definitely, I mean, the development, which direction it will develop, definitely does not depend on Turkmen government. It more depends on Taliban government because everyone in Turkmenistan knows that there is nothing much that they can do, and they know that the Taliban government is unpredictable because they are new in the regional politics, and you never know what kind of decisions and what kind of conclusions they might come in this or that that issue.
Okay, thank you. Pakhlawan, Uzbek-Afghan relations with the Taliban in power. Fragile, stable, what do you think?
Well, as Farooq rightly pointed out, a lot depends on Taliban and on their ability to control the situation in Afghanistan. And by offering kind of economic incentives, Uzbeks have been hoping that the Taliban would keep the threat coming from different Islamic groups at base, and Uzbeks has been offering a range of incentives to help build the Trans-Afghan corridor, for example, and this would eventually help them gain to access to ports in Pakistan and from there the world markets. And Uzbek government is definitely determined to start to complete this project, and they really view the Trans-Afghan corridor as a game changer for trade and regional cooperation. They are doing everything they can to get Afghanistan involved and make it a key part of regional dynamics, and they are at the forefront of kind of regional diplomacies with Taliban. I think they did play some role, for example, in Kazakhstan's decision to remove Taliban from its list of terrorist organizations. Well, so far, they've been managing the thing. I mean, by offering the kind of economic incentives, they've been managing the good relations with Taliban. But as we've mentioned earlier, a lot depends on the Taliban's ability to control the whole territory of Afghanistan and to their ability to control specifically those extremist elements inside the country, which is seen as a threat by the countries in Central Asia. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Kadir. I'm going to give you the last word. And you can deal individually with Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan if you wish, or Central Asia regionally. Are Taliban's relations with those countries fragile or stable and getting better?
Well, my colleagues put it very well. They elaborated very well on this to your question. But I would like to add that there is one thing that the Taliban government is not recognized by any other government yet, including the Central Asian countries. So the Central Asian countries, Afghanistan's neighbors, they are focusing mostly right now on economy and economic projects. So these countries are sort of having a conservative approach toward the Taliban government in Afghanistan. They are looking how the situation will evolve over the coming one or two or several years. So how stable Afghanistan will remain. Because even if we are talking about this Afghan-Uzbek trans railway or corridor, so these projects, they need like billions of dollars of investment. Like this project in particular, it needs this trans-Afghan railway project, needs $7 billion of investment. And to attract that investment, I think they need outside investment from countries such as Gulf countries, Persian Gulf, like UAE, Qatar were involved in some negotiations with Uzbek authorities, for instance. If they are not assured of the long-term stability in the country, so I don't think that these countries or investors will be willing to invest that amount on these projects. So overall, the relation between the Taliban government and the Central Asian countries, particularly today we are discussing Uzbekistan and Turkmenistan, is sort of, I can't call it very stable, but we will see it we will see that what will happen in the next few years. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And thank you, Farooq, Kadir, and Pahlawan for being on the program. And a big thank you, as always, to Nathan Shoemaker, our Mejlis podcast producer in Washington, D.C. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Mejlis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website at rfarl.org. Thanks, and see you in a couple weeks. Bye-bye.